I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
I'm Cindy Lauper. My psoriasis was all over, even on my scalp, which may mean four times the risk for psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx works on both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX. Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
This is the Pro Football Doc Podcast with Dr. David Hsiao. As a practicing orthopedic surgeon who's performed hundreds of procedures on NFL players and as the former longtime head team physician for the San Diego Chargers, Dr. Hsiao uses his insider knowledge to decipher injuries to a documented 95% accuracy level. He's the SiriusXM Sports Medical Analyst and is quoted everywhere from SportsCenter to NFL Live. More than 100,000 followers can't be wrong. And following him on Twitter, looking for his instant insights on injuries during games. Now, Dr. David Hsiao, the Pro Football Doc.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another Pro Football Doc podcast, post week 12, Thanksgiving week podcast. Happy Thanksgiving week to everybody. Happy turkey. And welcome to our show, producer Greg Peterson.
Dr. Hsiao, happy Thanksgiving to you. Hope everything is going well this week.
Yeah, everything's good. You know, chugging along. I'm looking forward to the short week. And three football games on Thursday, that's pretty cool. Not only is it cool for Thursday, it makes Sundays more enjoyable because, boy, when there's nine games on at that early game slot, it's hard to keep track. I don't know about you. It's very hard to keep track of everything.
I have no idea what was going on. Why would you have two games in that 1:05 p.m. Pacific slot and then all the 10 a.m. Pacific games are like nine of them? That's just absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I'll tell you why, Greg, and I get it's ridiculous and you're singing my song and I wish it wasn't that way. Instead of 9-2, what is wrong with 7-4, right? I mean, what's the big deal, right? You should be able to fit it at least on a DirecTV 8 box, right? And then the afternoon games 4 on a 4 box, it'd be much, much better. But here's why, and I'm not defending the NFL. I'm saying I wish it weren't this way. But think about it this way, Greg. Here's the explanation. Pull up a map of NFL cities. It is very much an East Coast and even a Northeast based league. If you look at the distribution, and the country is sort of an East Coast and Northeast based country in terms of population. And if you look at time zones, the majority of teams are out that way. And when you have teams that are on a bye, like the Chargers and some other West Coast teams, and then you have a team where the schedule quirk is, you know, the Seahawks are playing in Philadelphia and the Raiders are playing in New York, this is kind of what you get. You have to give credit to the Patriots. They were playing at home and they agreed to a 4:25 local time kickoff. I mean, it's getting dark. They basically agreed to a night game and they could have insisted on a 1 p.m. kickoff, I believe. Then it would have been 10-1. But here's another topic that we'll talk about today. And Greg, you know, you and I haven't rehearsed this at all. I kind of like the spontaneity. I like the spontaneity. One of the other topics was like, you know, of course the Jets won because of the early kickoff game for the Raiders on the East Coast. If that is talked about as a theoretical advantage, why would the Jets agree to make it a 4 p.m. kickoff local time, 1 p.m. West Coast time kickoff to make it easier on the Raiders? That's a competitive advantage of having the home game. Make them play at 10 a.m. their time, right? So there's more to it than the NFL being mean to us and making the games happen the way that they are. The home teams, TV has a lot of say, and that's probably why that Cowboys-Patriots game was in the afternoon. TV wanted it that way, right? They needed a national broadcast to have.
And then the Packers game was flipped to the Sunday night game.
Correct, right. So the Packers game there, it vacated that window. Nobody was making the Jets flip it to 4 p.m. kickoff local time, right? So that's where it actually makes some sense. It's not an evil plot by the league. It's just the way that it falls. But I agree with you. I'd love it the other way, right? I mean, if you're a Jets fan, why would you want it moved back? You're used to going at 1 o'clock, and this is just the way that it is. You know, if kids are going, they could actually go instead of a 4 o'clock game getting home later at night. So I'm glad you bring that up. And, you know, some teams seem to not worry about that. I mean, Seattle certainly didn't have a problem playing that early kickoff. The Raiders seem to. As you know, I was with the San Diego Chargers, and that was talked about a lot, these early kickoffs. And teams would do all sorts of things. We used to practice at 10 a.m. the week leading up to the game, right? We used to set all our clocks differently and different things. And sometimes it just is what it is in terms of the travel. And for those teams, and this is a little hint for you, for as much as you say that the travel is, no question, travel's harder on the West Coast teams because they're so far away. And quite honestly, this is one of the reasons I say London is not impossible. Because if you look at the miles the Seattle Seahawks log, it's probably, depending on the season, depending on the schedule, not much different than what a London team would log. Because, you know, if you go from New York City to London, it's not that much further than New York City to LA. It's not that much further. The West Coast teams always have the worst of the travel in terms of distance. And they always have the worst of the travel on the way to a game based on time zones and what have you. But let me tell you, the East Coast teams absolutely have the worst of the travel on the way home. Imagine how, they're not even East Coast, but imagine how miserable Green Bay is this morning. My guess off the top of my head is they didn't get home till 4 a.m. Might even be 5 a.m. Think about it. The game ended about, let's say, 8:30, a little before 9 o'clock Pacific time. That's 11 p.m. in Green Bay. By the time they pack up and get out of the stadium, it's at least midnight. By the time they get on their charter and load up and go, it's at least 1. It's at least a, what, 3.5-hour flight? So that already puts you at 4:30. It's even later than I thought. By the time you land, unload, and get home, you're at 5:30, 6 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, my dad actually lives out in Wisconsin, does a lot of work in San Francisco, minimum 4 hours.
Right. So this is a short week for the Packers. I mean, their Monday's gone. Their Monday's recovering even Tuesday from this time zone change. And especially with the night game. So the travel works both ways, but I agree with you. I wish we could even out the games a little bit there. But thank you very much for that spontaneous topic, Greg.
I think you
that
got it.
Proves more interesting than most. A second topic here we'll say here is talk about is, you know, this injury-prone thing keeps popping up. And I keep seeing everywhere today, Carson Wentz, he's injury-prone. What's his deal? He can't stay healthy. We don't like him. First of all, the quarterback that everyone likes in – well, not everyone. The quarterback that Eagle fans pine for if they hate Carson Wentz is Nick Foles. And didn't he get injured week one of this season? Number two, Carson Wentz hurt his hand, and it's not bad. He's tough. He finished the game. And how did he hurt his hand? It was a botched handoff exchange, but I don't know that you can say Miles Sanders or Carson Wentz were at fault. I'd say the team, the whole right side of the line was out between Brandon Brooks with the anxiety and Lane Johnson with the concussion, and that's where the pressure came immediately, disrupting the handoff. And give your guy credit, Carson Wentz. He chased down the D lineman on the backside to prevent a score and actually caused him to fumble the ball. And I mean, he was making a play and he contusion or jammed his hand. And it turns out to be just that. X-rays normal, no ligament damage, not a Drew Brees issue with grip of the ball. It's actually a third finger somewhere in the hand that was jammed or contused. But everyone's like giving him grief for being injury prone. I don't think he's injury prone. I mean, he had an ACL, LCL injury, came back quickly, maybe too quickly, and that's why he wasn't 100%. Then developed the back issue kind of as a result of the knee. So those two are linked. And now he has a hand issue because of this. I mean, look, I don't think the guy's injury prone. I don't really like that injury prone thing, but it's funny how fans get on people. I mean, heck, he's playing through everything. If anything, I think he's tough. But when you get hurt, Greg, and you don't play well, you're injury prone. When you get hurt and you come back and have a game like George Kittle, you're a hero, and they don't worry about you being injury prone, right? I mean, they don't use that designation. So it's kind of about perspective, but I don't love injury prone unless they're linked injuries, they're the same injuries, they're preventable injuries. That's where we might get into injury prone. I mean, Wentz is the game of football and traumatic injuries. Then, well, one thing I forgot about to talk about the travel. Greg, you must hate the travel. Your Packers are all world except in California.
And go figure, because Aaron Rodgers is a graduate of the University of California.
Yeah, I mean, they got ambushed by the L.A. Chargers. That still is hard for me to say, L.A. Chargers. Anyways, they got ambushed a few weeks ago by the L.A. Chargers. And, I mean, I'd say they weren't even in the game at all last night against the 49ers. Two not fun trips home, getting home at 5:30, 6 a.m., that's for sure.
Oh, agreed. They just need some home cooking in Lambeau.
Yeah, and then let's see. One other interesting thing we'll talk about before we move on to our special guest today. Andrew Brandt had an interesting article. And you know what, Greg? We should probably get Andrew Brandt on the show.
He's terrific, yes.
I think he's terrific. I don't really know him personally, but I don't know. Someone I know must know him. I'm sure Andrew Brandt is listening. Andrew Brandt, since you're listening and because you're such a faithful Pro Football Doc follower, joking, DM me. call me maybe, whatever that song is. Anyways, he wrote an interesting article basically talking about medical issues and was kind of covering Trent Williams and Kelechi Osemele. But basically, he's talking about distrust among the NFLPA and the agents, a built-in distrust of team medical doctors, team medical staff. Quote, he wrote an article, I have it in my Twitter timeline. He's talking about medical disputes between players and teams happen much more than we know. And the quote that I pulled out was this: an undeniable trend fueled by agents and the NFLPA is that the default setting for players is now distrust towards team medical personnel. I think that's true. I saw it coming in the towards the end of my time with the San Diego Chargers. I think I told this story once. There's an agent who I respect who literally every – he had a lot of mid-level guys, good guys. And every time someone got a simple ankle sprain, he would send them out for a second opinion. I'm like, he rolled his ankle like playing like a basketball type injury. He's fine. Why do you need the second opinion? Well, we just need to do this and whatever. And then he would send me like his players from the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm like, wait a minute. Am I a good doctor or am I a bad doctor? It has nothing to do with it. It's just the bias. They feel like the players, the doctors work for the team. And there's this inherent distrust. And I see it. And the NFLPA encourages the second opinions. Look, Greg, I always say to my regular patients even today, but even to players, if someone, a doctor, ever tells you don't go get a second opinion, you should run to go get one. But what I often say to patients or to players is you're free to go get a second opinion. I'm not sure you need one because it's pretty darn straightforward. And a lot of times they still go just to be sure. I think the easiest way to get distrust is if you block that. First of all, you don't have a right to block it. So I just encouraged it and let it happen. And I figured honestly was the best policy. But the way I always handled it was if you work for any company, you need to take care of the assets of the company. So if you work for a bank, you need to take care of the money, right? And any financial institution. Well, if you work with a team, what are the assets? The assets are the players. So you just have to take care of the players and then it all sorts itself out. So the other suggestion that some people have is to make the doctors independent. We can do a whole show on why that logistically wouldn't work. And quite honestly, the players in the locker room wouldn't want that to happen either. But that's for another time. But if you get a chance, read that article from Andrew Brandt. I think it's a good one. All right, let's take a quick break here, and we'll come back with our special guest, Will Brinson, for part two of the Pro Football Doc podcast.
This is the Pro Football Doc podcast with Dr. David Schaff.
All right, welcome back to segment two of the Pro Football Doc podcast, our special guest segment. Very excited to have on Will Brinson today from CBS Sports. Will is everywhere. He's ahead of his time. And to be honest, I've never, you know, really done much with Will. I've been on the CBS Fantasy Sports podcast and other things that he's been on. And we've kind of crossed paths, but we've never really chatted so this is purely off the cuff and cold. And Will, I apologize. I'm not a professional interviewer, but so glad to have you on the show.
Oh, Doc, I do everything off the cuff. I don't plan. I don't prep. If they hadn't given me a producer for my podcast, it would be a roving disaster. I typically, my prep for the podcast is like watching football and buying beer. And then I like, they actually, on our on the Pick Six podcast, my daily NFL show that I do, Ryan Wilson, like I like to not like I can diagnose anything like injuries. Cause I'm, you know, just a guy who went to college for 8 years, not a doctor. I can't remember what I was talking about. I was talking about like a patellar tendon or like a Lisfranc injury. And Ryan Wilson decided to start calling me Bro Football Doc, because I am not a doctor and not good at diagnosing injury. So a lovely little playoff on Pro Football Doc. I'm Bro Football Doc. So I'm happy.
I like that. I like that. That sounds good to me. So my first question, since you bring it up for Bro Football Doc, is what kind of beer?
You know what? I had last night during the Sunday show in celebration of hitting the Cleveland over and the Browns minus 10. I had a little Great Lakes Christmas Ale from the greater Northeast Ohio area. Fantastic beer. I'm usually like an IPA guy, but it's colder in North Carolina here now. It popped up at Total Wine. It's an awesome beer. So I fired that up. But yeah, typically an IPA guy, but I will, once it gets a little cooler outside, I'll start indulging in some darker offerings.
Gotcha. And like I said, since we're off the cuff and steering it whichever way the conversation goes, 8 years of college. I mean, I remember Animal House, 6 years of college down the drain. 8 years of college?
No, it's not really that many. I just like to, I like to joke about it. My dad likes to say, you know, most people, he likes to use the Tommy Boy line on me. I was a fifth year plus senior. My dad likes to joke. He's like, you know, a lot of people go to college for 8 years. They're called doctors. I had fun in college, and that, you know, maybe it extended my tenure there a little bit longer than it needed to.
Well, you mentioned it a little bit here, but maybe you should always plan to be on the Pro Football Doc Injury Podcast, because you basically hit every pick this week.
I did. I got a little hot this week, and it was pretty exciting. I had a really rough week in week 11. I think I had 3 wins against the spread. And I think a lot of times, you know, when you're doing, and I killed it this week. I think it was like 12-2 or something like that. But a lot of times when you're picking games in the NFL, it is easy to get flustered by a bad week and to overcompensate and to like go with what you saw the week before. And I think you have to be principled. Like some weeks you're just going to get, you know, take an L, and you need to stick by what you think. But, you know, if you think you're good at it or you can pick games and you need to, or analyze football, you need to stick with what your eyes are telling you and sort of what the market is saying. And this week felt like a pretty nice bounce back week. And, it certainly worked out well. So, I mean, you got to get a couple lucky bounces here and there. But yeah, I mean, I feel pretty good about it. I think I went, 10-3 against the spread this week. That's not bad with the Rams pending on Monday night, and then maybe even better straight up. It was, 11-2 straight up. Yeah, not a bad week for your boy.
No, and some of your picks and even your totals, they crushed. I mean, it wasn't even close, most of them, right? The only one that might have been close was that the Falcons over. You needed Matt Schaub to come in to save you there.
Yeah, that over snuck in courtesy of Matt Schaub. But, you know, anytime you can get an over on a Matt Schaub play like that, you feel good. I'd actually had it pushed because I bought it earlier in the week. But, you know, the one that I bet on Saturday night, too, that ended up going real south for me, unfortunately, it was the Raiders Jets over. If that had hit, I would have had a really, really big day. It didn't hit primarily because the Raiders scored 3 points. Which,
if someone could tell you that the Jets were going to score 34 points, you would have bet your house on the over.
Absolutely, yeah, I would have hammered I would have hammered the over because I would have expected the Jets scoring 34 points in 3 straight weeks, by the way. That offense is sort of coming along, and I like the Jets looking at them this week. It's already moved up to 4.5. They're at Cincinnati. Assuming that, Ryan Finley plays for the Bengals, I think the Jets are probably going to win this game by 10-plus points. So I'm probably going to keep riding the Jets, even as a heavy, heaviest road favorite in this spot.
Interesting. So since this is an injury podcast and we talk medical stuff, and you are the bro football doc, how do you incorporate injuries and what do you do with injuries into your picks, whether it's sides or totals, or how does that factor in?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at, you know, certain injuries to, let's say, a quarterback, right? I mean, that's going to be factored in pretty heavily in the Vegas line. Now, I do think when you're making picks throughout the week, like back when Cam Newton, when the Panthers were playing the Cardinals, Cam was not yet ruled out. There's a sense he might be ruled out, and the Panthers were 1.5 point favorites or 2.5 point favorites in Arizona. Well, you know, if you got the inclination that Cam might not play, you could have bet on the Cardinals as dogs. And then once the line moved, you could have come back and bet on the Panthers as dogs and got yourself a pretty nice window. Now, it didn't hit. You ended up losing the juice, but that's a really nice opportunity if you want to make some cash on that end. From a general perspective, when you look at injuries to major players, I think Vegas is very good about that. So, like, unless you can jump ahead of it when the news comes out, then more or less you're going to have the injury baked into the line. However, I think there are some times, Doc, when you know, you can take an injury and say, look, you know, this is something that people are ignoring. And a great example comes from this week with Lane Johnson's injury. You know, he had a concussion. He wasn't playing for the Eagles. We knew he was going to be out. There was no chance he'd play. Carson Wentz's passer rating drops 20 points when Lane Johnson doesn't play for Philadelphia. That is a huge amount. That's a massive drop off. Vegas made Philly the favorite in this game to open the week. Seattle was +3. And that's Russell Wilson. They play well in the Eastern time zone. They're a healthy team. they're, you know, in the playoff hunt. They, you know, maybe the underlying metrics don't see them as a great team. But Philadelphia without Lane Johnson, even if Seattle was missing Jadeveon Clowney, should have been downgraded more than that. It should have been a pick 'em when they open. And so I jumped on Seattle plus three right away. Seattle actually closed minus 2.5 and still covered that. But I think there are a lot of times there are underlying injuries on the offensive line and in the secondary that people don't look at because we're so fantasy focused that we get hooked into, you know, injuries to wide receivers and running backs. Whereas, you know, if you have like a situation with the Saints where Marshawn Lattimore is going to be out and they're playing the Bucs, well, Mike Evans' over yardage total is probably a decent prop because he's not going to be shadowed by Marshawn Lattimore. That's just, you know, hypothetical there. But the Lane Johnson one is a prime example where if it's looking like he's probably going to miss and he doesn't practice on Wednesday with a concussion issue, you know he's probably not going to play. And so there's a ton of value, I think, in taking Seattle early in the week. But yeah, I mean, it really speaks more, I think, the injury stuff to the underlying injuries rather than like the obvious, you know, Odell Beckham foot injury or whatever it would be.
No question. And for the star players, look, if it's a starting quarterback, the odds aren't even out until an injury is declared. But, you know, for me, I found that you're right. Sometimes I, you know, can get it ahead of time. I remember last year at Thanksgiving when the Bears were saying Mitch Trubisky, actually, it would have been a year ago today, basically, when they were saying Mitch yeah. Trubisky, nothing to see here on his right throwing shoulder. Head coach Nagy singled out the play late in the fourth quarter on the Harrison Smith hit. I went back and looked at it and said, he's not playing on Thursday. He subluxed his shoulder. And I remember putting out the Union Tribune article at 1 p.m. on Tuesday, the next day, when Schefter, Rappaport, everyone was saying, you know, he's likely to play. He'll be fine. I remember putting that article out and looking at the lines, and it was Bears -3.5, -4. Yeah.
And but Stafford was playing in that game. Like, Stafford was healthy at that point.
Stafford was healthy. This was last year. And
he hadn't hurt his back last year yet. So, like,
correct.
He knew that Trubisky, who was playing really well, wasn't going to play. There's huge value in taking the Lions at the plus points.
Yeah, and Tuesday afternoon, Pacific time, I put the article out at 1. I went to clinic, saw patients. And at 3 p.m., I checked, and it moved across the 3. It was hit 2.5. So
you got there moving lines.
Well, I don't know if it was me, but what else happens on Tuesday afternoon on a Thanksgiving week random thing? But I think the more powerful thing here, Will, that I found, and I'm not a gambler, right? I just look at things, and now that gambling's, you know, last year at this point, I didn't really do much because I was still worried about gambling not being legalized, right? But with the Supreme Court ruling, look, I'm a practicing doctor, so I have to pretend to be respectable, I guess. But now that gambling's legalized, I think it's quite interesting. I try and look at it, and I don't know if you had a chance to look at the injury index that we put out on our website or the field view. But to me, the more powerful thing is, you know, when you look at, let's say, the Chargers, and they have 4 out of 5 starting offensive linemen that have injury issues, that's pretty powerful. Or early this season, when the Eagles had secondary issues, or the one game against the Rams when it looked like all 4 of the Browns starting defensive backs, both safeties and both corners, were going to miss and be out. Those are the opportunities where injuries come into play. And maybe in some ways more for the total than the side, because you're right, the quarterbacks and big players are baked into the line already.
For sure. I tend to, yeah, for sides, I think that I would, you know, like, again, just to go back to the Seattle, you know, Seattle-Philadelphia game, you know that Jadeveon Clowney is going to be missing, so that sort of hurts the defense, right? But, you know, it's not the end of the world. More importantly, you know Lane Johnson's going to be out. You know Alshon Jeffrey's going to be out. You know Nelson Aguilar is going to be out. You know, we knew Jordan Howard was going to be out. It was going to be difficult, extremely difficult, I think, for the Eagles to score points. And without Lane Johnson to protect, it was going to be difficult for them to stretch the field. We knew there was a bunch of wind. We knew there was a bunch of rainy weather. So it made a lot of sense in that spot to look at the under, I think. And so I'm with you. You know, if you think that the Chargers are potentially facing a situation where they're not going to have their offensive linemen and Phillip Rivers, especially Russell Okung, we've noticed, you know, when Russell Okung doesn't play, Rivers sees a drop off in production, then maybe the under is the play in that spot. And especially even in a game, like, you can think about it and say, all right, I'm going to watch it and bet it live and take it if they score early, maybe come back and get the under there. And, you know, you have opportunities to window it or whatever. But I do think that, yeah, absolutely. The injuries play a huge factor in the side, and maybe more so there because you're able to gain an advantage on the game as a full game perspective.
And you mentioned live betting. Are you doing any live betting stuff now? Do you think that's the future? I mean, it is in Europe. 80% of the money is in game or live.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. 100% the future. I mean, it's, like, you know, I thought, the Patriots Cowboys game was a great example because sometimes these algorithms don't exactly, you know, they don't account for, I mean, usually they, you know, they're very good. Don't get me wrong, but you know, that over under sat at between 40 and 45 for basically the entire first half. And there was no reason not to just kind of pepper it over and over again. You could watch that game and there was no way that those two teams were going to manage to combine for 40 points. I mean, it just wasn't going to happen. Not with the way Jason Garrett coaches in conservative fashion, not with that win in Foxborough. Now you got lucky, you know, miss a few field goals here, you know, don't have great looks to go for it on fourth down and all that. But, yeah, I mean, I think by and large that live betting is a great opportunity. If you can look at certain spots and say, okay, you know, this is not going to, you know, they're not I can tell by the flow of this game, they're not going to score a ton of points. Now, having said that, I got hosed bad betting the NC State live under against Louisville heavily a couple of weeks ago. I was out of the game and it's just, wind is whipping side to side, pouring, you know, dumping rain. It's like, there's no way these guys are going to score here. And then they scored two touchdowns in 2 minutes to start the third quarter and it went over. So, you know, you can get burnt pretty bad in those spots too.
Well, I always say, right, the ball's not round, right? So there's going to be the funny bounces that happen within a game. It changes things. But the one thing I like about the wagering space, like, if you're 60% right, you're a god, right? Yeah. And 55 and you're awesome, right? For what I do with the injury information, I feel like, I mean, I've documented up to 95% correct, but when I am wrong, boy, people just kill me over it.
Well, that's just how it works. You know, it's, I mean, the same thing with me. Like if I do a great breakdown of X, you know, X, X, and X, and I explain why this pick is right, you know, nobody's like tweeting me like, great job, you nailed the pick. But like, if you whiff on it, if you whiff on some best bets, you're getting tweets. I mean, that's just, you know, how it works. You're not, nobody's out here on the internet dapping each other up, congratulating us on great work. People are out here looking to tear each other down. And unfortunately, that's how it works. And especially in the injury field too, where, you know, I mean, you could have a situation where you're not going to know until you see the results. You know, the MRI can, you know, you're not going to know for sure. I mean, diagnosing from, you know, from afar, at a distance is inherently just going to be more difficult. And, you know, it's also, you're talking about different human beings, right? Like, I don't know. I can't remember exactly what your diagnosis was for. Actually, you were right on Patrick Mahomes, I think, right? Didn't you get Mahomes?
Yeah, knee dislocation in game. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But
I said back in 3 to 4 weeks, he came back in 3.5.
Yeah, yeah. But like when you, I think I remember seeing you say that. I was like, there's no way he's coming back in 3 weeks. Like, I'm not that I doubted you, but I was like, I mean, I just saw that guy's kneecap sticking out. Like, you know, and so I think that's part of the problem too, is that, you know, a lot of times these injuries can look worse than they are. And then, in, you know, the cases like the ACL, a lot of times the injury doesn't even look bad. You know, it's a non-contact injury and fans, the general fan will look at it and be like, well, that's, you know, he just hit his knee, you know, just got hit by a turf monster and he fell down. Well, that could be the worst possible injury as opposed to Mahomes lying on the ground having to have his kneecap pop back in.
No question. This week I had a fun one. I guess not a fun one because it ended up being a bad injury, but in the Thursday game, Colts and Texans, their backup linebacker on a special teams play went down. And I said, uh-oh, by video, ACL and probable MCL, you know, significant worry. And within 5 minutes, the Texans PR department put out on Dylan Cole, calf injury, questionable to return. Mm. Now, I got a lot of grief on that.
Like, a lot of times when we're talking about those PR things, like, you know, you can say whatever you want, but those are not always the most accurate. Like sometimes those PR people will fudge them a little bit. I'm not accusing a PR staff of fudging, but let's be realistic here, Doc. Sometimes what you see from the PR staff, they could be like neck injury. It's like, no, that's a concussion. I know that's a concussion because I saw it. That's a, you know what I mean? Yeah. Sometimes you have to be a little, like, it's tough. It's a tough spot for you because of what's being announced and what you're seeing.
No question. And unfortunately, it turns out to be ACL, of course, on Dylan Cole by the next day. But my point is this, if teams were completely straightforward and there was no such thing as coach speak, I don't think I would have social media following or people would be interested. If everyone actually knew what was going on, everyone was straightforward, you wouldn't need me to interpret what's going on or to try and let people in on what's happening. I mean, heck, George Kittle was an example. I didn't know how bad his ankle was, of course, but looking at that knee hyperextension, like, it was Thanksgiving, and I remember being out trick-or-treating, and I looked on my phone, and then by the time I looked at it, I knew it wasn't serious, like season ending, but within a few minutes after that, he scored this big long touchdown. But at halftime, I still came out and said, boy, I'm not sure he's going to play the second half. And he did, but he didn't play the fourth quarter, right? And then even when the MRI came back as minor issues, I'm like, yeah, that sounds like coach speak to me, even though the 49ers are pretty honest. And I still said multi-week. And, he had a great game yesterday, and he will go going forward. But he did miss, he was out 3.5 weeks from Thanksgiving from the game yesterday.
Different humans respond differently. And the other thing, too, you talk about the PR people, but, like, I mean, Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, they're trying to figure out why Mitchell Trubisky's not on the field. We're later told it's a hip injury, and the Bears PR staff has no information to provide them at the time of Mitchell Trubisky being held on the sidelines by Matt Nagy. Like, that's where it becomes hard to buy into whatever sort of thing you're being sold, because, it doesn't, like, you're like, look, you can tell me it's a hip injury all you want, but I'm watching what's happening on the field, and it appears to be more of a benching than a hip injury.
Well, yeah, and I actually came out and defended Nagy and Trubisky. I do believe there was a hip injury, hip pointer. It happened with 39 seconds left before the second half. And, I didn't get to it till later that night or the next morning. And if you look at it, Michael Brockers knees him in the back of the hip hard enough as he's going down that he actually fumbles the ball momentarily, jars the ball loose. Sure. And that does get more sore. But I think where you get it is the situation, his poor play, and the insistence of, it was only the hip injury, and that's the only reason I took him out. If it was like, well, he had an injury that was making it harder for him to play, that might have, been more believable. But the fact that he was, like, implying that he couldn't play because of the hip injury, and right, that wasn't the case, obviously.
The whole thing across the board in terms of the explanation, especially when he's like, he could barely sit down or walk or snap the ball. It's like, well, you ran him on an option on 3rd and 2 when you really needed a first down. So I have a little trouble, finding a mesh point here where the truth and where the injury and all this lies.
No question. And in some ways everyone hates on the Patriots, right? But I appreciate what they do. They don't lie at all. They just don't tell you anything.
Yeah.
So they're not lying. They don't tell you. Tom Brady, questionable with his elbow. There's nothing wrong with that. He probably had something with his elbow. There's no such thing as a probable designation anymore. So they throw out a questionable. And meanwhile, there's 12 guys that are questionable, and they play hide the bacon, and no one's worried about Mohamed Sanu or Philip Dorsett anymore. Everyone's worried about Tom Brady.
That's actually a really good point, because they've been putting Brady on the injury report for years, and when it happens, it's always like, if it's a new one, it's always a story. It's an update on NFL Network. It's an ESPN alert. It's, somebody at CBS is writing an article about it, and no one is talking about the fact that three of their four starting wide receivers may or may not play. I don't want to pile on Jason Garrett. I'm doing that up for my column on CBSSports.com right now as I'm writing it. But, like, if you know you're going up against Jason Garrett and you list Tom Brady on Friday as questionable with a right elbow injury, there's 100% chance Jason Garrett's going to waste at least 2.5 hours of his preparation time for this football game discussing with other people Tom Brady's injury. They're just not going to dismiss it outright the way, if Dak was on the injury report, Belichick's not, he's like, whatever, we're not dealing with this. We're not wasting time. Focus on the game. I guarantee you that sort of thing causes some sort of hubbub in Dallas and at least throws them off and wastes some of their preparation for the game. And it distracts them from the rest of the injury report. So yeah, the Patriots, the masters of the subterfuge.
Yeah, the hide the bacon game. And one of the clues is whenever you see a dozen players on there, you know there's one or two significant ones not playing. You just have to figure out which ones. That's the unusual week. Anyways, I promised I'd get you out of here. Will, pleasure to chat. Met all expectations. Thank you for coming on when you didn't really even know who I was. We've never even met before. I appreciate it.
No, of course, Doc. Anytime, always a good time. And we will appear later on the same podcast, but not like a different podcast, Fantasy Football Today, which I have to go record with our mutual friend, Adam Azier. Thanks for having me on, man.
Thank you. That's the great Will Brinson. We'll take a break and we'll come back with the third segment where we do our injury rundown for the week after post week 12. Thank you very much.
More now with Dr. David Chow, the Pro Football Doc.
All right, welcome back to the third and final segment of the Pro Football Doc podcast. I enjoyed Greg. I didn't really know him very well, but I thought he was good. He's a good guy.
He's a fun guy. Oh, yeah, and he really knows his sports and his sports betting. I've had him once before on one of the other podcasts that I do on this network. That's cool with Steve Heitner. He brought it there. He brought it here. Always a good chat.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I actually, off the topic, but I actually got a chance to meet Steve at that charity thing. And nice guy. Brings me back to my younger days in the Seinfeld stuff. All right, so let's go through the injury rundown, and we'll start at quarterbacks here. Carson Wentz, we talked about a little bit at the top of the show. Hand injury, a contusion near his third finger. Good news, should not affect his grip. Should be fine. Will practice this week. Medical workup essentially negative. He's not injury prone. Much to do about nothing. This is not a Drew Brees issue. Carson Wentz will be fine this week going forward. Other issues. Tom Brady, I didn't notice anything with his elbow. As we mentioned, more of a game of legal hide the bacon. I'm sure he had an elbow issue. And questionable is anywhere from, it's not 50-50, it's any chance he might not play, it's questionable because probable is no longer a designation. No worries about Tom Brady. Jameis Winston did fine with his ankle, actually got a victory. Deshaun Watson was on Thursday, he did fine with his high ankle. Matt Stafford, he's not going to play on Thanksgiving. He won't go on injured reserve unless the Lions are out of it. He's just that tough. But as we've talked about, more than just an isolated transverse process fracture, upper thoracic injury fracture, December at the earliest, and I'd say maybe mid-December for Matthew Stafford. Let's move on to some running backs. Matt Breida didn't play. He's out. I think he probably could elevate and come back next week. Devonta Freeman was out again. I think he's out another week before he comes back from his foot sprain, at least another week. Jordan Howard still out with the shoulder issue. It's a stinger. Look, if the nerve hasn't woken up yet, don't hold your breath on this week. Let's see him practicing first with contact. It's a slow sunrise. It's no longer, if the nerve doesn't wake up quickly like a light switch, it is a slow sunrise. So Jordan Howard will still have to follow. James Conner didn't play this week with his AC joint, and my best guess is another week before he comes back for James Conner. Damian Williams for the Chiefs on a bye, anterior rib cartilage issue. He'll be better. He could play next week with an injection, but I'm not sure that he'll be 100%. And the same goes with Marlon Mack. Missed Thursday's game. He's got a right hand third metacarpal fracture. He absolutely could play this week in week 13 for the Colts, but has to carry the ball exclusively in the left hand. Nothing in the passing game or pass protection modify his game, but I would not rule him out for this week at all. Let's hit some wide receivers. Brandon Cooks is back for the first time here from his concussions. Juju Smith-Schuster was out with his knee and concussion. I looked at the video. I think it's more concussion than knee. I didn't see a lot on the knee, which is good news, and hopefully he can be back next week. Alshon Jeffrey's getting close, but did not play with an ankle. He's got a 50-50 chance, maybe even a little better, to play next week finally, and the Eagles really need him. Nelson Aguilar's knee is probably still out again. I don't think he's that close yet. A.J. Green, still another week or two. I mean, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago I said at least a month. And yes, he may end up going on injured reserve. He may not play this season the way it goes, but I wouldn't count on this next week either. For those of people who have been hanging on to A.J. Green all year for fantasy and for fantasy playoffs, I don't know if that's going to pay off for you. Mohamed Sanu did not play, as well as Philip Dorsett. Philip Dorsett with concussion, Mohamed Sanu with a mild high ankle. I think it's mild. I think Sanu can go next week. Hopefully Dorsett will get cleared and go. The other big one is Tyreek Hill. Hamstring injury, mild, on a bye. I'm not sure he goes this week. Because of the speed, quick fast twitch guy that he is, there's a chance of re-aggravation if he goes too soon. So I'm leaning towards no on Tyreek Hill, but we'll see how his week goes. DJ Moore hyperextended his elbow, finished the game, should be fine. Julio Jones, a big one, went down on his right shoulder, did come back into the game. I think he got an AC joint injection. It was an AC joint sprain. Short week, not much practice. Not much practice for anyone this week. Short week there. But I still think he's got a good chance to play in the game if he'll take the pregame injection. And Renfro, the Raiders wide receiver with some rib issues. Let's move on to tight end George Kittle. Bone bruise or capsular injury in his knee and a fracture in his ankle. Chip fracture, not a structural fracture. Had a good game. And guess what? Kittle fans and 49er fans, next week will be even better. He's probably put this essentially behind him. Austin Hooper is still out. He's probably put this essentially behind him. And then Austin Hooper of the Falcons with his MCL. I think he's another week at least before he returns. And I know Hooper wants to return. I know guys who own him in fantasy want to have him, but I don't think he's as concerned about fantasy or fantasy playoffs as getting his knee right. And of course, the Falcons aren't going anywhere this year, so might lead to another week or more. David Njoku, I think he's coming back. My best guess is he has a chance to play this week. And the reason why I say that is it was a scaphoid fracture. It was a wrist injury. So he's been able to run, train, work out, get acclimated to football and get in and out of routes and different things. So I think his return to play timeline is quicker than most. And I would look for Njoku to maybe play this week. Delanie Walker is still lingering somewhat with his ankle. And we talked about at the beginning of the season that his ankle would probably have him at less than 100%. And unfortunately, that's lingered longer than even I thought. And Evan Ingram with his foot was still out with the midfoot Lisfranc injury. And maybe another week for him. And the big bad news for tight ends is Eric Ebron headed to injured reserve, needs surgery on both ankles. He's had a lackluster year, probably been dealing with both ankles. The problem is when it's both ankles, you literally don't have a good leg to stand on. You can't favor one side. And therefore, he's out. Not sure if his surgery is a cleanup scope or a ligament tightening, but he's out for the season. Offensive lineman Isaiah Wynn came back, seemed to play okay from his toe. First game back for the Patriots after injured reserve. Cordy Glenn, first game back after concussion for the Bengals. Two left tackles played. Brandon Brooks left with an illness that was later determined to be anxiety disorder, something that he has embraced publicly to try and win the battle. He had some issues in Texas. He even tweeted about it, talking about the anxiety and what he went through. So good on him to embrace it, embrace the challenge. But anxiety is real, and boy, it's hard to figure out what the outcome is going to be. Hopefully the Eagles will get on top of it. They just, in the last 2 weeks, gave him a $56.2 million four-year contract extension. I don't know. Maybe he feels the pressure of living up to expectations. I mean, he did a great job coming back from the Achilles from January. Maybe it was he didn't have his right tackle next to him, Lane Johnson. And Andre Dillard hadn't played there in the NFL ever. So maybe that had to do with it. Who knows? I don't want to put anything out there that I don't know is fact, but hopefully he deals with it and gets better. Lane Johnson should be back this next week, which is good. For the Jets, Beecham was out a little bit, but Adoga, his backup, has an MCL sprain. Let's talk about a couple of defenders. Leighton Vander Esch did not play with his neck issue. I'm not sure how much is related to his college issues, where maybe he dropped in the draft. The Cowboys are insistent it's not long-term. There's a chance with his herniated disc that he's going to get neck surgery and be looking at next season. So let's keep our eye out on Leighton Vander Esch. What a luxury to have Sean Lee as the backup. Jadeveon Clowney did not play with his core muscle issue. He visited the doctor in Philadelphia, but did not play. I think Clowney's trying to play through the year and have surgery in the offseason. So Let's see how effective he can be. TJ Watt has a bone bruise, the good kind of bone bruise, not the kind that we thought George Kittle had, not the intra-articular kind, but a direct bone bruise where his kneecap or knee hit a helmet. That's just a pain tolerance thing. He should be okay. Jerron Reed of the Seahawks, an ankle sprain. Derwin James, still his 21-day window isn't open for the Chargers yet, so look for him at least 2 weeks after his practice window opens, and it hasn't opened yet. And then Dontari Poe, I fear not good for the Panthers D lineman. Dontari Poe, I'm worried about a patella tendon rupture. That has not been announced. The head coach has agreed significant injury, MRI pending. But with a patella tendon rupture would mean surgery and end of his season. So hopefully we get good news on Dontari Poe. That's kind of it for our injury rundown, other than the egos bruised of your Packers, Greg.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a tough one. And I'm taking a look at Twitter, and I think that we covered most of them. And there's no questions coming in from the state of Wisconsin.
Yes. Any more games in California this year? I don't think so.
We are good there.
All right. So then you got a chance. You got a chance. Unless, of course, it's a playoff game against the 49ers.
Oh, don't even bring that up, because that game would be in San Francisco more than likely.
Well, at this rate, almost for sure, right? Because you lost the head-to-head tiebreaker and you're behind them, but two losses in the loss column. So it's really three games back. You're not going to catch the 49ers. Although they have a tough stretch right now. They play a lot of hard teams. Beast of the week, pretty easy one. Got to give him a lot of credit because of his attitude and powering through two injuries, a knee and the ankle. George Kittle made a very successful return Sunday night. Six catches, 129 yards, a touchdown, looked good. And Adam Schefter reported he broke a bone in his ankle. And when that was announced, I said, you know, George Kittle is superhuman and Superman, but he's still human. And it wasn't going to be a structural fracture, but it's still a fracture, a chip fracture. And the head coach confirmed that. And with the knee issue too, bone bruise or hyperextension of the knee, as well as the ankle, I think he made a very good comeback, and so he impressed me. And so chip fracture or not chip fracture, it's still a fracture, still two injuries. He still came back and played where you couldn't really tell he had anything. And his injury should be behind him. This week's Beast of the Week is going to be George Kittle there. And with that, that's it for the ProFootball.com podcast this Thanksgiving week. Happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you again on Periscope and other things on Thursday during the Turkey Day. And thanks for listening.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.